might pause to figure out whether it seems likely to be a forest fire, a campfire, or a lantern, and then act accordingly. Free will is just another way of saying we have the capacity to deliberate on our options to act, which in turn gives us the opportunity to choose what's best for us down the road. With self-control, we can direct our behavior toward the future in general, and what may lie ahead for us specifically, rather than always engaging in knee-jerk actions that might get us nowhere, or might get us to Denver, where we have no future. We can get ready for the tomorrows, the next weeks, the next months, and even the next years in life. We can organize ourselves with an eye on that future. And in that future, there are many prizes to be had, such as the goals mentioned by the people quoted at the beginning of this chapter. In that future, there are also all those hazards that can be avoided when we can anticipate them and plan well for them. Without self-control, we wind up in places we didn't really want to be, feeling stupid, guilty or demoralized, and lazy or apathetic, not to mention rudderless. The six components of self-control. You may view self-control as a pretty loaded term. How many times since you were a child have you heard the command, control yourself? How many times did you think to yourself that you would, if you only had some idea how? Understanding how self-control works will diffuse the term. You'll also see that self-control is a process with little entry points, where using a strategy or tool can free your will, so you can get what you want out of life, not just this minute, but in the future stretching out before you. These are the six key components involved in self-control. 1. Self-control is a self-directed action. This means instead of acting in direct response toward an event, you stop and take action toward yourself. When his friend said he was going to Denver, if Len did not have ADHD, he probably would have inhibited the "wow, that sounds great to me too" response, long enough to think about what uprooting himself might actually mean over the long term. 2. These self-directed actions are designed to change your subsequent behavior. Len might have decided to nod and say, "good luck," or he might have chosen to say, "wow, that sounds great to me too, but maybe I could come out after you tell me whether it's panning out for you." Or maybe he would have opted not to take any action right now, but have recognized the need to think about taking action in the future, if moving sounded good, but going to Denver right now wouldn't work for a variety of reasons. Perhaps Len should start thinking about where he might want to relocate in the future. 3. This change in subsequent behavior is designed to achieve a net gain, maximization, of positive outcomes across both the short and long term for the individual. The behavior is directed at the future, but will also take the immediate consequences into account to come up with the best bottom line. Len might have to give up the positive consequence of going on an exciting road trip to get a greater positive outcome later, such as moving to Denver, but only after he had found a job out there. With self-control, we sacrifice the bird in the hand for the more profitable two in the bush. Unless, of course, we have adult ADHD, in which case we will keep opting for the bird in the hand and never work our way toward a flock. 4. Self-control depends on a preference for larger delayed rewards over smaller immediate ones. If you can't conceive of the future, or you don't value later consequences, there's no point to self-control, and you won't use it. If Len didn't have ADHD, he might not have to think for more than a second about what he'd rather do. Run off to Denver today, or plan for a move someplace new over the next year. He'd immediately know that realizing the dream of having a good job and an affordable home in a beautiful new location was more valuable to him than the fleeting fun of taking off without a plan just to get there right away. Psychologists have found that our preference for larger delayed consequences increases from childhood all the way up to our early 30s. paralleling the development of the frontal lobes of the brain, the seat of our self-control. But ADHD derails that development and leaves even adults picking the smaller immediate outcomes instead of the larger delayed ones. 5. Self-control bridges the time lapse between an event, our response, and an outcome. We may not need self-control at all when the gap between event, response, and outcome is small or nil. Imagine your 5-year-old daughter spotting the ice cream truck coming toward her. She asks you for an ice cream. The truck stops. You buy one and hand it to her. She's completely calm through the short sequence of events. Now imagine that your daughter hears the ice cream truck but can't see it. She has to contain her excitement while she figures out whether the truck is coming toward her and how far away it is. By the time it comes into her field of vision, she covets that ice cream as if she hasn't had one for years. She jumps up and down and squeals with excitement as she pleads, "Daddy, Daddy, there it is. Can I have an ice cream?" Whereupon you say, "Well, an ice cream will spoil your dinner. How about if we buy one and put it in the freezer for later?" It now takes every ounce of self-control a 5-year-old can muster to inhibit the impulse to kick you in the shins. For a 5-year-old in this situation, self-control may involve mainly controlling emotions. For an adult trying to keep working towards saving for a house, when there are dozens of opportunities every day to spend that money right then and there instead, all kinds of abilities are required to exert self-control. When the time between event, response, and outcome is long, self-control helps us manage ourselves relative to time and the future. It helps us bind these events, disconnected in time, into a cohesive idea that we can take with us to keep our eye on the prize. Researchers refer to bridging the gap between event, response, and outcome over long time spans as a capacity for the cross-temporal organization of behavioral contingencies. That's a mouthful. Think of it as the ability to engage in time management, or more aptly, to manage yourself relative to the passage of time. As an adult with ADHD, Len will have a hard time working toward that relocation goal. With the outcome so far off, he's likely to forget about the whole plan and do little or nothing to prepare. He might set a date for moving, but be just as unprepared for it when the time comes as he was when taking off on a whim with his friend. Self-control in this case would mean he'd have to push himself to research regions of the United States, spend time every week on job searches in the chosen area, find out how much income he'd need to afford the kind of home he wants, and more, all before reaping the benefits of the move. 6. For self-control to occur, we need the capacity for both hindsight and foresight. How do we bind the events, responses, and outcomes of life together when there are large gaps in time between them? We have to have a fundamental sense of time, that there is a past, a present, and a future, and be able to conjecture about the future. To speculate about the future, we have to be able to recall our past and evaluate it to detect possible patterns. This recall of the past, or hindsight, gives us the ability to think about possible futures, or foresight. It would prevent Len from taking off for another locale without preparation, as he had when he left for Denver. What you might have thought of as self-control as a child, sitting still when told to, being quiet in class when you really wanted to tell your friend something, eating only one donut instead of the whole box, has far greater ramifications in adult life. Paradoxically, without self-control, you can't be free. Let's take a look at the abilities that make up self-control next. 9. Executive functions. The abilities that make up self-control, and more. Why does it take me 2 hours to write a business letter that other people can write in 10 minutes? I can't seem to get my ideas to flow in this nice orderly sequence to write down what I want to say. I have a terrible time controlling my emotions, especially if something happens that frustrates or upsets me. One of the many times I locked my keys in my car and really had to get somewhere important for my job, I got so angry at myself that I started to tear the door off the car. People driving by must have been staring at me and thinking, "That guy is really crazy." But I didn't care. Chapter 7 showed that we use inhibition to delay the decision to respond to an event. To wait. Chapter 8 showed that this delay gives us time to engage in self-control. Self-control allows us to choose the wisest course of action to get the best possible outcome in the future. But how do we control ourselves? What allows us to use the time created by resisting impulse wisely? That's the subject of Chapter 9. Scientists in the field of neuropsychology call the capacities behind self-control executive functions, or sometimes executive skills. They're the actions directed at ourselves. The mental activities we engage in when we think about our future, and what we should be doing to get there, and to make it better. Different scientists have conceptualized executive functions differently. But what you'll learn here is the view I've developed. It is, after all, my book. Research now suggests that there are at least 4 executive functions besides inhibition. 5 different actions we use to stop ourselves, think things over, and guide our eventual behavior. We use these actions for the single purpose of controlling our own behavior toward achieving a better future. Nonverbal working memory. Verbal working memory. Emotion regulation. Planning and problem solving. Here's how they work. Executive functions are more obvious in children and more internalized in adults. We are hardly aware of these mental machinations. No one can really see us undergoing them. They're the things we adults do in our heads all day long as we choose what to do in every situation. They are what most of us refer to simply as thinking. Yet I believe all 4 are entirely obvious public behavior early in child development. Executive functions were likely also public or obvious early in human evolution, when the human brain was much more primitive. As we mature, we internalize them, like the species did as it evolved. These familiar examples will explain what I mean. 6-year-old Lena puts her hand over her mouth when she wants to tell a secret that her friends just told her not to. At age 16, she won't need the physical restraint. She'll use internal self-talk to stop herself, even if she really wants to tell. 8-year-old Rico softly but audibly repeats, "Stay inside the lines," and "Don't push too hard on the pencil" during classroom writing assignments, to keep himself focused on the teacher's rules and reminders. When he's older, he'll be able to use his mind's voice so automatically that he may not even be aware that he's issuing his own silent reminders. Chrissy and her classmates start out using their fingers, some beads, and then a number line on their desk to carry out the steps to solve a math problem. As they mature, they'll be able to complete problems using mental manipulation. Adults with ADHD report that they need to use tactics that fall in between obvious public self-reminders and the nearly automatic mental reminders that other adults give themselves. One adult said he locks his mouth with an invisible key to get himself to stop talking. Do you use tricks like that to control your behavior? Executive functions operate together, but can cause impairments separately. Other scientists and I have divided executive functioning into separate abilities to understand them better. But we humans don't experience them as separate, nor do we use them one at a time as adults. The executive functions operate like the sections of a symphony orchestra, playing simultaneously to produce seamlessly beautiful music. It is the action of these executive functions in concert that permits normal human self-control. When ADHD enters the picture, so do deficits in executive functions. These deficits might occur more in one executive function than in the others, producing different types of behavior problems with self-control in different adults with ADHD. This means there are really four different types of self-control. Knowing which one is the biggest problem for you makes it easier to choose external tools and strategies that can make up for internal deficits. Later in the chapter, you'll have a chance to review the problems listed under each executive function to get an idea of where your biggest problems lie. The four executive functions develop one at a time, in sequence, each added to the earlier ones, to build a mental structure that facilitates self-control. As each executive function develops in a child, control over the child's behavior gradually shifts in four important ways that should ultimately add up to adult self-determination. From external to internal. We all start out as babies being controlled by purely external events. A loud noise, a mother's departure, a wet diaper, or, much later, the commands and directives of our parents. And then we become increasingly managed by internal forms of information, much of which deals with the past and future, images, self-speech, motivation, and so forth, which make up our hindsight and foresight. From others to the self. At first, we need to be controlled and managed entirely by others, such as parents, gradually becoming able to better control ourselves. From the present to the future. When very young, the only thing that matters to us is what's happening right now. Throughout childhood, we become increasingly aware of and directed toward future events. Think of how long you'd expect a typical 3-year-old to think ahead and plan out her day, compared to how far in advance a 12-year-old should be able to do it, a day or two, and then for what period a 36-year-old should be able to do so, 6 to 12 weeks ahead. From instant gratification to deferred gratification. More and more as we mature, we find the big prize at the end of the long haul worth waiting for, and so turn away from the small seductions and rewards of the moment to work for those much bigger rewards. Think of what people usually mean when they call adults childish. The barbs usually start flying at adults who seem ruled by whatever is going on around them, who need other adults to do their thinking for them, who don't think ahead, and who have no patience. Sound at all familiar? Does an example from your own life come to mind? As an adult with ADHD, you've been subjected to delayed development of each of the four executive functions. You're no child, but these lags make you less effective than other adults and may make your peers treat you as if you were a child. You can head off blame, including self-blame, and help yourself make these shifts from child to adult functioning more fully if you know a little more about how the condition disables each executive function. Nonverbal working memory, using the mind's eye. Nonverbal working memory is the first of the four executive functions to develop, right alongside your ability to inhibit the immediate urges to act. It's the capacity to hold information in mind, not through words, but through your senses. So this executive function allows you to hold in your head pictures, sounds, tastes, touches, and scents. Because vision is our most important sense for survival, nonverbal working memory largely represents the ability to engage in visual imagery, to see to yourself, in your mind's eye. A close second in importance is hearing, so we can also hear to ourselves using nonverbal working memory. More accurately, we receive past events, and we hear past sounds and the things others have said to us. How nonverbal working memory guides us. 1. We get a map that leads us to the future we want. Seeing to ourselves means re-seeing. What we've seen sometime in the past, we can see again in our head, thanks to this executive function. What we've heard before, we can hear again, also in our head. Resensing past experience creates an internal stream of information through our mind that we use to guide our behavior across time toward a goal. By envisioning our past, we can foresee a possible future. 2. we gain the powerful tool called imitation. When you can hold an image in your mind of what you have seen and experienced, you also now have the power to imitate the behavior of others. Instead of having to go through the hard knocks of trial and error learning in every new situation, you can call up your mental picture of how Dad, or your best friend, handled a particular problem beautifully. It's important to understand that when you learn through nonverbal working memory, you don't necessarily copy the other person's actions literally, but rather copy your image of those actions. You always put your own spin on what you learn from others. Nonverbal working memory also enables you to do the opposite of what others have done. Rather than imitate them in everything they do, when what they did failed or resulted in errors, punishment, or harm. Nonverbal working memory allows not only imitation, but the opposite, staying away from what someone else did that proved ineffective. This is called vicarious learning. 3. We can foresee the consequences of our actions. Chapter 8 explained that self-control depends on both hindsight and foresight. We need to be able to see in our mind's eye both our past experiences and any pattern that sheds light on our likely future experiences. Hindsight brings your pertinent past history forward into the moment to inform you of the best way to behave given what happened to you before. Foresight, or forethought, means taking any patterns perceived in images from the past to anticipate what will happen in the future. 4. We gain self-awareness. We use our visual imagery to study our past, or even just to hold our immediate past behavior in mind, so we can monitor our own actions. Then we can compare them against what our plans, goals, and strategies were, and evaluate how well we are doing in performing that task or achieving our goals. We gain a greater self-awareness of our life across time. 5. We're capable of managing our time. The ability to hold a sequence of past events in our mind and refer to them across time appears to give us a sense of time itself and makes us better able to manage our behavior relative to that sense of time passing. 6. We learn to defer gratification. To value a delayed consequence, you must have a sense of the future and use it to guide your behavior. The more you use that sense, the more likely you are to focus on the big rewards down the road, rather than the immediate smaller prizes. 7. We can see further and further ahead. As hindsight and forethought develop, we gain an expanding window on time, past, present, future, in our conscious mind. Small children can't see much past a few minutes ahead, but by adulthood, ages 20 to 30, behavior is typically being organized to deal with events 8 to 12 weeks ahead. And this time horizon can be extended if the consequences associated with those events are particularly crucial to us. 8. We value cooperation and sharing. The golden rule may not seem like an obvious product of nonverbal working memory or visualizing to yourself. But when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. With a grasp of the past, you remember what others have done for you and you for them. And with your sense of the future, you realize that sharing and social cooperation ensure you against possible shortfalls of resources. Therefore, you're willing to give up some excess resources now in the hope that the recipient will share abundance with you later, when you may need it. How ADHD interferes with nonverbal working memory. To get an idea of which type of self-control you might target when selecting strategies from steps 4 and 5, think about which of the following are the biggest problems for you. You can't reactivate a large number or a wide variety of past events. Typically, the more a child matures, the greater the number and variety of past events he can conjure up. But the lags caused by ADHD keep the capacity for visual imagery and reheard experiences fairly primitive. This is a major gap in the resources adults typically have to guide their behavior. So to others, you might look like you don't think before you act. It would be more accurate to say you have trouble remembering before you act. Sam is known to friends as tactless because he blurts out whatever comes to mind. He can't read social cues because he has no repertoire of subtle facial expressions. Long, complicated sequences of behavior may pose a serious challenge for you. Knowing how to behave in delicate social situations, sticking with the rules of a complex game, completing a multi-step task like filing a tax return. All of these typical adult situations may leave you with no clue, because your brain has difficulty holding all those mental images. Brad's hyperactivity as a child kept him out of the team sports he loved, so he thought he'd join the company softball team to make up for lost time. He no longer got tagged out for constantly leading off a base, but from inning to inning, he'd forget how the opposing players hit, who was a fast runner, and how his own team members fielded. So he was always in the wrong place at the wrong time, and led his team in errors. After being benched for a couple of games, he quit the team. Vicarious learning may not be available to you. If you have trouble learning from the successes and mistakes you've observed in others, you're stuck learning everything the slow, painful way, by yourself, on your own, through trial and error. Claire's co-workers sometimes wondered whether she was taking drugs. Otherwise, how could she have failed to notice the reaction others got when they interrupted the boss at a meeting, took too long to return a customer's call, or missed a report deadline? When she complained bitterly about being barked at in front of everyone for these transgressions, they all wrote her off as either an idiot or stoned. You have little foresight. If you can't hold past images in mind long enough, or hold enough of them to see patterns developing, you won't be able to predict what's likely to happen next and get ready for it. Mike had gotten enough tickets to have the image of a flashing red light approaching his car from behind emblazoned on his brain. Yet when he impulsively drove 30 miles per hour over the speed limit to get to his night class on time, he never predicted at that moment that he'd get stopped again. But he did. Self-awareness comes slowly to you. If you can't monitor how you're doing, whether in a routine task or a social situation, it's not easy to see where you are in relation to your long-term goals. You may not get the mental signals that it's time to rechart a course that's not taking you where you want to go. Nan really wanted a lasting relationship. But whenever she was at a party, she'd drink too much, get too personal with strangers, and make cracks about other women's outfits. Any guy she met who was interested at first drifted off quickly. When Nan got home at the end of the evening, she invariably looked at herself in the mirror, pronounced herself hot, and then brooded about why all the guys were such losers. Without a strong sense of the future, you'll opt for the quick reward, sacrificing gradual accumulation of assets. You'll be like the grasshopper who whiles away the summer singing while the ant stores food for the winter, or the first little pig who quickly built a house of mere straw, while his more self-controlled sibling took longer but built his more substantially of brick. When the winter arrives, or the wolf is at the door, the quick shortcut is never as good as the effort to pay attention to the longer term. Tim and Marie were on the verge of divorce. Tim claimed to want to buy a house as much as his wife. But every time they went on vacation, he'd listen to some timeshare pitch and end up signing a contract for a week at yet another resort that Marie didn't necessarily want to return to. At the rate they were able to save for a down payment after these investments, the couple wouldn't be able to buy a house until they were 70. You may not make a good team player or know how to be a good friend. When the grasshopper was starving, the ant rebuked him for failing to think ahead and create a nutritional stockpile. Social insurance can save your life, But if you have no concept of the future, sharing what you have with others makes no sense. All you can appreciate at the moment is the loss of your own hard-earned assets. You can see where this is going for adults with ADHD. You may have little capacity for or interest in sharing, cooperation, turn-taking, and repaying the favors of others, or fulfilling the promises you've made to others. They may very well respond to your requests for help, as the ant did to the grasshopper. Tara didn't understand why so many of her friends didn't return her phone calls. Her friends complained to each other that she was awfully quick to bum a ride, or ask for another favor, but never hesitated to say no when one of them needed help from her. She owed every one of them a small amount of money, but consistently claimed she couldn't afford it when a friend was short of cash, and asked if she could pick up the tab for a fast-food burger. Many of them eventually became ex-friends. Which of the preceding difficulties are big ones for you? Verbal working memory. Using the mind's voice. The next executive function to develop in children that facilitates self-control is the ability to talk to yourself. As kids, we do this publicly. We narrate our play and weigh our decisions. As every parent knows, kids can be pretty free with their commentary, even though their remarks may not be too flattering. Gradually, children begin to talk to themselves silently. By age 7 through 9, the voice occurs entirely in our mind. From this point on, the voice in our head will accompany us through all our waking hours, until we die. How verbal working memory guides us. The capacity to converse with yourself, in concert with the capacity to sense to yourself, brings about a number of important features for self-control. 1. It allows us to describe and otherwise verbally contemplate the nature of an event or situation. Let's say you come home from work and say hello to your roommate, and he doesn't answer. Nonverbal working memory might tell you that the look on his face indicates he's not happy. With verbal working memory, you might put words to the way he could be feeling. He's angry. But that's still a global and vague sense of the situation. You might then use your mind's voice to look for more information by asking yourself specific questions, such as, is he angry at me, at his girlfriend, his boss, or someone else? Describing the situation to yourself gets you much more specific information than a mental image, and might head you away from a hasty, what's wrong with you, and toward a more nuanced and socially sensitive reply. You might say to yourself, he's not glaring at me, he's just stomping around the room looking mad. Last time it turned out he was just ticked off that he had to work that weekend. 2. It makes problem-solving possible. With private speech, we can interrogate ourselves about our past to figure out how to solve a current dilemma. In trying to figure out how best to respond to your aggravated roommate, you might ask yourself, what happened last time I assumed he was mad at me? This introspection might reveal that you picked a fight, which your roommate was all too happy to engage in so he could take out his ire on someone. Your conclusion might then be that you need to find a way to ask him what's wrong without being either defensive or offensive. 3. We can formulate rules and plans. We need verbal working memory to examine how things went in the past, and extract from that rules for making sure they will go well in the future. Our self-questioning and other self-talk allow us to weigh pros and cons based on our past experience, to talk to ourselves about what we could change to improve the future, and to set out steps toward a goal. Our rules might involve diet and other lifestyle matters, social conduct, spending or saving habits, and more. Often we make our self-statements and rules external by writing them down on a to-do list to make them easier to remember and use later. Eventually we go further and generate a hierarchy of rules about rules, called meta-rules. An example of a meta-rule in government might be the procedure required for enacting new legislation. In a school, it might be that the criteria for expelling a student must be approved by the school board. An example from daily life is the 6 well-known steps to solving a problem. A. State the problem specifically. B. List as many solutions as you can. C. Critique each one for its utility. D. Select the one most likely to achieve your goal. E. Implement it. And F. Evaluate its success. 4. We can follow rules we're given. Using nonverbal and verbal working memory together, we call up mental pictures of similar situations from the past, and then ask ourselves whether a rule we've learned applies here. If we don't really want to follow the rule anyway, we might use self-talk to either persuade ourselves to obey or convince ourselves that this is one of those exceptions that make the rule. Our self-speech complements our visual imagery by allowing us to get much more information out of our thinking than an image alone can convey. 5. We can hold in mind what we have silently read to ourselves. In school, it was called reading comprehension. In the adult world, it's necessary in most of what we do. We need to understand and remember what we've read in reports at work. We need to grasp the rules and procedures at our kids' schools so we don't put the kids at a disadvantage. If a bill goes unpaid, we need to comprehend the consequences explained in the statement and what action we must take to avoid the financial and legal fallout. 6. We're capable of moral reasoning. The rules, laws, ethics, customs of the culture we live in play an important role in guiding our behavior. If we don't know what they are and can't talk to ourselves to remember what they are and how to apply them, we can end up on the fringes of society, if not ousted altogether. How ADHD interferes with verbal working memory. Is verbal working memory the type of self-control that eludes you most? You don't use self-talk to control yourself or solve problems. Without the benefit of self-talk, you shoot from the hip all the time. You might make a lot of false assumptions about people's intentions because you don't examine your first impression. You might literally attack any problem rather than thinking it through. You might go through roommate after roommate and end up living alone. You let events and the environment rule. If you can't use self-speech to formulate your own rules and plans, you're always at the mercy of the moment. You're also vulnerable to the influence of others, whose advice and directive substitute for your own self-determined rules of behavior. Ned was a good kid, according to his teachers and his parents. But as he became independent, he seemed increasingly subject to bad influences. There was always someone at the local tavern who would convince Ned that he could buy another round. There was always a whim that would carry Ned into some ill-advised decision, even though later he agreed with his parents that he should have known better. You have trouble setting your own standards and making your own plans. Without visual imagery and the ability to question your own past behavior, you won't extrapolate a list of do's and don'ts for future use. Nina struggles with her weight, but she can't seem to resist a tempting dessert or a snack when she sees it, so she keeps eating a diet that adds pounds to her frame. Without verbal working memory, along with nonverbal working memory, Nina can't connect her eating habits with her weight or stick to a diet. Beth is tired of being broke, but when she has paycheck in hand, she can't seem to stop shopping. If she could reflect on the consequences of those actions, she might be able to talk herself into going to the bank first and depositing a portion of her check in her savings account. Both women have occasionally tried to make rules to help themselves. Nina decided to severely limit her consumption of fat and sugar. Beth decided to put $100 from each paycheck into her savings account. The problem was that neither of them could make adjustments when their plans didn't work out. Nina's diet made her feel so deprived that she cheated constantly and never lost weight. With verbal working memory to aid her, she could have eventually created a meta-rule, that before she went on any diet, she would go see her physician and get advice on a sensible weight loss routine. Beth found that her savings account was growing way too slowly. With verbal and nonverbal working memory, she could have decided that she would review her spending-saving plan every month to see where she could save more and spend less. You follow certain rules rigidly. A rule is not doing its job unless it can bend a little. The world does not operate on absolutes. But if you can't talk to yourself about the pros and cons, and review with yourself the particulars of the situation you're in, you might follow a rule so rigidly that it will backfire. People with ADHD often lack flexibility. Max heard that certain fish contain toxic levels of mercury, so he's decided he won't eat any fish, no matter what type or what its source. He looks foolish to friends and has offended people who have invited him over or taken him out for dinner, and he gets indignant and nasty when questioned. Kay has a set of workplace rules that she follows religiously because she doesn't trust her instincts. For each type of task, she follows the rules that she has developed on her own or been given outright by her supervisors to be sure she doesn't go off course. Following these rules prevents anxiety from consuming her at work. As long as the rules never change, it takes her a long time to adjust when new rules enter the mix or replace old ones. Or you don't follow them at all. Mike knew that if he got one more speeding ticket, he'd lose his license. The only way he could muffle his instinct to floor it was to call up images of his previous tickets. Picture what it would be like to be barred from driving and continuously talk himself into staying below the speed limit. He didn't do that, and now he has to get up 2 hours earlier to take the bus to work. You might commit crimes and violate ethical and moral codes. Many of society's rules and customs are unspoken. Without verbal and nonverbal working memory to help you discern them, you can go through life without a clue, breaking customs and offending your fellow citizens left and right. Laws are written down, but without the mind's voice to remind you of them, you might easily yield to impulse and do whatever you want, and end up behind bars. Tanya knew it was against the law to steal a car, but that the joyride she and her friends took in the neighbor's unlocked sports car was a felony never entered her mind at the time. You don't comprehend what you're exposed to as easily as others, whether it's what you read, see, or hear. The give and take between verbal and nonverbal working memory is what makes it possible for us to make sense of all the input we receive from the world around us. Without that, we miss out on many, many mental connections. Of course, Eric could read, but there were holes in what he took from his reading. His own work was pronounced sloppy by his boss, because he could quote statistics from various reports, but often got things backwards when he drew conclusions from the data. He sent his son to school on a field trip day without the permission slip, the bag lunch, or the swimsuit required. His son had to stay at school with a younger class. The family's electricity had been turned off twice because Eric forgot to pay the bill, and then he didn't notice the deadline for disconnection or the hefty reconnection fee. What types of verbal working memory problems interfere with your life? Self-regulation of emotion, using the mind's heart. The third executive function that develops is self-regulation of emotion. Emotions are powerful motivators. They can arouse us to act or prevent us from acting. They can tell us to fight or send us into flight. If we have no control over our emotions, we have a lot less control over what we do. Emotions arise whether we want them to or not. They are triggered naturally by external events of all kinds. Sadness is triggered by loss or anticipating loss. Anger is triggered by unfairness, humiliation, unmet expectations, or unanswered needs. Joy is triggered when our expectations and needs are not only met, but exceeded, and when our desires are fulfilled. But it's not just external events that bring on emotions. The resensed experiences and self-talk made possible by nonverbal and verbal working memory also have emotional overtones. Picturing your spouse might bring on a feeling of love. Talking to yourself about some injustice you recently suffered can make you feel rage. Fortunately, nonverbal and verbal working memory are also instrumental in helping us regulate our emotional response. We can use self-talk to deliberate with ourselves about how we feel and what we should do about it. We can use our visual imagery and self-speech to try to alter an initial emotional reaction that might cause problems for us, especially if that initial response pushes us into regrettable behavior. Many adults with ADHD say they would be sunk without self-talk. They also find using visual imagery very beneficial, but say it requires practice, practice, and more practice. What's been your experience? How self-regulation of emotion guides us. 1. We can control our own arousal. By arousal, I mean the urge and energy to act, or activation. Emotions are intended to spur us into action. But what if those emotions are exaggerated, or they are based on a misperception of the situation? In those cases, we're obviously going to overreact or go off half-cocked in some way. Controlling our initial emotional reactions to events can prevent us from doing something rash, or it can drive us to act when we may be suffering from inertia or just plain boredom with what we need to get done. With emotional self-regulation possible, we now have three executive functions that can interact, each supporting the other. Holding on to the images of the past and our visions for the future, and being able to talk ourselves down, can ensure that emotion doesn't derail our plans that supports our actions toward a better future, even in the absence of immediate rewards. Being able to dampen emotional arousal means we won't start talking crazy to ourselves and change course without serious consideration. Being able to visualize our goals and how we will feel when we get there can sustain us through the most boring or unrewarding of immediate activities necessary to get there. 2. We can motivate ourselves when we don't have external rewards to push us. Call it drive, willpower, persistence, determination, stick-to-itiveness, what have you. By regulating our emotions, we endow ourselves with internal motivation when no one else is handing us any incentive from the outside. Again, it's the three executive functions working in concert that allow us to motivate ourselves to keep going when the going gets tough or boring. Let's say you want to volunteer with an organization devoted to protecting the environment. You make phone call after phone call asking people to support a major recycling effort. Before long, you're extremely dejected at all the rejections you get. In that case, you use the two executive functions you already have to remind you of your successes so far, keep your eye on the ultimate goal, and push you to keep making those calls. If envisioning your success and the potential for reaching the goal isn't enough to get you to pick up that phone again, maybe you intentionally conjure up images of the destruction of the planet and use the anger these images stimulate to motivate you onward. 3. We can make sure we express emotion in socially acceptable ways. This is a biggie. Because we expect adults to have this executive function, society reacts pretty negatively to extreme or exaggerated expressions of emotion. We accept the fact that babies scream at the slightest emotional pain, because it's a self-preservation mechanism. And we understand perfectly when 3-year-olds throw a temper tantrum when they don't get the candy at the grocery store checkout counter. But we're embarrassed and disapproving of an adult who bursts into tears or yells in anger in public over a minor frustration like having to stand in a long line at the supermarket. There's a reason we use the expression emotionally charged. Emotion is so powerful that it's as if it has an electrical charge that is transferred to those around us. We're expected to keep it under control, so as not to impose our feelings on other people. If we are able to regulate our own emotions, when we are angry, we can go to our happy place by using images of positive past experiences and talking ourselves into calming down before we finally react to some emotion-laden event. Responding impulsively to our first emotional reactions to events is rarely a good idea if we want to make or keep friends or intimate partners, much less a job. Do you use images of positive past experiences to talk yourself down when angry, anxious, or stressed? Accomplishments that you're proud of. Whether it's climbing a mountain, finishing a detailed field report, or getting along with everyone at a family wedding, leave you feeling both calm and motivated, and are great candidates for visual imagery. What are yours? To put it more plainly, this executive function lets us soothe ourselves when we are having extreme emotional reactions to an event. Use our own mental images and words to distract ourselves from the powerful stimulus that has set off our strong emotional feelings. Consider and implement an alternative emotion by calling up images and words associated with more positive emotions and relaxation. Choose a more moderate emotional tone or reaction that is supportive of, not detrimental to, our own longer-term goals and welfare. This is what emotional self-control is all about, helping us stop and moderate those powerful knee-jerk emotions and substitute emotions that are more mature, socially acceptable, and consistent with our longer-term welfare. How ADHD interferes with self-regulation of emotion. Is it emotional self-control that eludes you most? Your emotional reactions to events are as impulsive as the rest of your behavior and can make you an outcast. Without the ability to put on the brakes, you don't have time to alter your initial emotional reaction. Without well-developed verbal and nonverbal working memory, you have less capacity for the visual imagery and self-speech that can help you calm your emotions. The first characteristic Jay's friends use to describe him is hot-headed. They've all witnessed embarrassing displays of sudden anger from Jay at the slightest provocation, whether it's a pizza delivered with the wrong toppings or a stranger giving him a look that no one else can even see. His emotional hair trigger has cost him social invitations, the trust of co-workers, and a lot of friendships. Emotional reactions that are disproportionate to the event often steer you wrong. I'm not talking about abnormal, irrational, or grossly inappropriate reactions, but exaggerated emotion that's not in keeping with the situation. Laughing loudly at a mild pun made quietly at a funeral, sobbing after a minor snub, can lead to social rejection. Disproportionate emotional reactions can also throw you off course. Feeling extremely angry about a minor failure at work could cause you to leave a job ideally suited to your career goals. Plunging into despair can paralyze you when you really need to keep moving. Becoming elated by modest success can convince you that you've reached your peak, and you might stop trying to achieve a goal that you really value. Vanessa was so ecstatic about her first ever sales award that she skipped into her boss's office and announced that she was going to start her own sales company and hoped the boss would consider hiring out the company's sales work to her new firm. Her initial excitement is understandable, but her unmoderated display of it to her boss borders on the grandiose. You find it tough to rouse yourself to do what you need to do. Emotion is definitely a double-edged sword. You want to keep exaggerated and impulsive emotion under control, but you also want to be able to call emotion into play to kick yourself into gear to get things done. You're more subject than other adults to frustration, boredom, and resentment. These tendencies already make it hard to stick with tasks. Add in the difficulties you suffer with attention and concentration, and it's even harder to see a task through. Here's where emotion can serve you well. If you can regulate your own emotions, you can use them to kickstart yourself to do work or to maintain your general arousal level, so you can stay awake, alert, and focused when you have goals to pursue. Does emotion run away with you more in some situations than in others? Which ones? These are the situations where you'll have to resolve to pull out your whole bag of self-talk and visual imagery tricks to stay in control. Planning and problem solving. Using the mind's playground. If we can hold images and words in mind, we eventually develop a means to manipulate them. We can take them apart, move them about, and recombine them into new arrangements or sequences, just for the sake of seeing what the results are likely to be. This is mental play, and it originates, I believe, in the extended period of manual physical play that all children go through as an important stage of early development. Play is simply taking things apart and recombining them just to see what happens, or what you wind up with when you do so. It begins with manual manipulation of objects in childhood, and progresses to the manipulation of images in your mind. Similarly, we play with words as children, and then play with combinations of words in our minds as adults. Both of these forms of play, visual-spatial and verbal, lead to novel recombinations of the material we're playing with. Most of those recombinations are junk. Think of some of the crazy ideas we all come up with and then discard when trying to get out of a tough dilemma. Maybe this cop won't give me a ticket if I tell him I was speeding because my wife is in the hospital about to have a baby. If I stay up all night tonight and tomorrow, that would give me enough hours to write that report that's already overdue. I could just stand up both of the women I made a date with for Saturday, and then neither one of them would think I preferred to go out with someone else. But some are new ideas or ways to solve problems that lead to new and even great inventions or innovations. How the ability to plan and problem solve guides us. 1. It helps us consider all the options. Planning entails the ability to generate multiple options for responding to a future event. When we make ourselves aware of all the possible ways to respond, we're much more likely to pick the best one. Think of brainstorming. This executive function is the best way to prevent the after-the-fact regret of, "Why didn't I think of that?" 2. It helps us decide on the best sequence of actions to reach a goal. In the form of mental play we call planning, we take apart and recombine information in our mind. Once we've got a comprehensive list of options, we can look at the steps each one might involve and then shuffle those steps around to see what sequence will be best. 3. It gives us an incredible capacity for goal-directed creativity, innovation, and problem-solving. Thinking outside the box just can't happen without the mental play that this executive function makes possible. It's like free will cubed. Not only do you decide what to do, but you do it in a way that might not have occurred to anyone else. Creativity and innovation may mean a faster route to where you want to go, less effort, or just a better result. How ADHD interferes with planning and problem solving. Are your problems with self-control connected to an inability to plan and problem solve? You can't think on your feet. Yes, I know. People usually view your tendency to react fast as a negative. But thinking on your feet means choosing a wise course of action quickly when the need arises suddenly, as it so often does in daily life. Not only is it tough for you to hold lots of information in mind because of deficits in working memory, but without the planning and problem-solving executive function, you can't manipulate the information quickly to plan out possible courses of action or to problem-solve your way around obstacles. James desperately wanted to be a firefighter, but when the preliminary training began, it was immediately clear that he couldn't make the quick decisions necessary to save a building or its inhabitants. You can't get or stay organized. Even when circumstances don't call for a snap decision, you're going to have trouble keeping materials and data organized. This goes for everything from the documentation for your tax return to your files at work or your diabetic child's medical records.